The views and opinions expressed by the hosts on MadisonTalks.com are those of the host. That's why we do it. Give us a call. 608-210-1667. Thanks for listening.
Longtime medicine banker Bob Schlick talked about his new book on the importance of mentors in life. Bob grew up in a Madison golfing family and was president of four well-known Madison area banks. In this book, he shares what he learned from family mentors, coaches, teachers, banking mentors, psychologists, and business mentors. Now Bob talks about these mentors, how they help shape, influence, and brighten his life with longtime Madison newspaper columnist and author Doug Moe.
Well, bless my soul, what's wrong with me?
Hello, thanks for joining us. I am Doug Moe, and really happy to be here chatting today with Bob Schlick about his new book, The Importance of Mentors in Life. Bob, maybe to start today, talk about your decision to kind of concentrate on mentors. I mean, there's a lot of different things in the book, but I guess the recurring theme throughout is you keep coming back to folks who influenced you, and that was your decision, was to do it that way. Right?
Yes, I knew that I was a very lucky person to grow up in a family with four brothers and a sister, and a mother and father that were in the home. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, housekeeper, and my dad was, a very hard worker. So I was a shy kid, and I was watching a lot of what my older brothers, and I learned so much from each one of them, but I'll just give you some examples. My oldest brother, Tom, was a linguist. He was a teacher. He taught English, French, German, social studies, and he kept telling me as a little kid, Bob, you got to make sure that you study hard in school because you might not get A's all the time, but you've got to work hard at it because it's going to determine what you amount to in life. And I thought that was pretty profound. He taught my brother Pete and I, who was 2 years older, how to play basketball. And he said, we're going to play Army basketball. And I said, and I looked at my brother Pete. We were probably 7 and 9 at the time. And we asked him, what is Army basketball? He said, there are no fouls. So, and I came up to probably his elbows. And so Pete and I were pretty tall, lean kids. And so I learned a lot from him about sports. And he played baseball, basketball. He was a very good golfer. And my brother Butch was an outstanding mentor. And, of course, he was an outstanding golfer. But he had played basketball as on the sophomore team. In 1958, when they won the state, and that was Roger Wiebe and Jim Bakken and that team, and I've got some information that we'll talk a little later. But so all of my brothers were very good mentors, including my brother Pete, who was just a couple years older because he did everything 2 years before I did, went to school. He told me about that, and he played sports before I did in ninth grade. We had the same high school football and basketball freshman coach, and that was John Olson and Nobby Kelleher.
But you've got to be willing to be a mentee,
yes,
to make the mentors have any importance.
Yes.
And that was something that obviously, I think maybe as a kid sometimes you just do it subconsciously, but
yeah,
at some point you must have said, yeah, they do know what they're talking about.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And I think that one of the smartest things I did was to listen. Because as I got older, I probably talk too much now, as you can tell.
We all do that.
But I was a listener, and I think that's a pretty important part. And then if you have an interest in something, if someone wants to be a PGA pro and play on the tour, well, if they can have a chance to talk to Jerry Kelly or Dennis Tiziani or Steve Stricker, Andy North, do it, because they're going to tell you, hey, this is what it's all about.
And it's not always true, I don't think, Bob, but I think many, many times accomplished people are willing to share, this kind of hard-earned wisdom.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't you find that?
Oh, yeah. I found it over my lifetime. The coaching mentors that I had and in the book, I talk about each of the things that I learned from them, and some of the things are repeated. You know, be on time, dress, look the best you can at all times. You only have one chance to make a first impression. And, you know, these coaches said the same things, but I wanted to keep that in the book because that's something that young people, and I think young people that don't have a mom and a dad could benefit from a book like this because sure. I've tried to write it so that, you know, somebody in seventh, eighth grade could enjoy it.
And we've talked a lot on in these podcasts about your dad's role as a mentor, but in fact, your mom was a good mentor for you
too,
right?
Oh, yes, yes. She really got me interested in history. She was a real historian, and she loved Lincoln. So I was just down visiting and thinking about her down in Springfield, Illinois, the Lincoln Library, and it's unbelievable. I mean, he's at a table. If anybody hasn't gone there, they should see it, the Lincoln Presidential Library. But he's in the White House, a replica of the White House, and he's at a table, and all his cabinets around the table, and he's talking about the Emancipation Proclamation, freeing the slaves.
Sure.
And one of the best things any president's ever done in the history of this country, without any question. And he looked at his cabinet, and he said, gentlemen, I want you to know that I'm not looking for any advice or any decision because we're going to do this. So he didn't want to get voted down. And you could see a couple of the cabinet members who had funny looks on their face like, no, you can't do this. But so I think the love of the outdoors, my mom was into plants and birds and she loved reading. She was a voracious reader. And my brother Tom, who had masters in two different areas and was a linguist, they'd get into debates, and Mom held her own, you know. So, and then I did some digging on my mom and found out she was a very good student at Central High School. Incidentally, a lot better than I was.
After your family, I think kind of the next series of mentors, if you will, that you had would have probably been coaches.
Yes.
High school sort of thing.
Yes. And the first coach that I really had that really influenced me was Wayne Nobby Kelleher. And of course, he had a legendary career. So all the coaches I had in high school ended up being in the Wisconsin Golf Hall of Fame. Some of them in
Sports Hall of Fame.
Sports Hall of Fame.
Right. Yeah.
Coach Kelleher had grown up in a family with three older brothers, or I shouldn't say that, one older brother and two younger brothers. And Coach Kelleher was an outstanding athlete at Madison Central High School. He starred in basketball and baseball and then played for Diney Mansfield 3 years, won three letters. And
Mansfield was UW baseball coach.
Yes, right? Diney Mansfield was right. UW baseball coach. Great motivator, very even-keeled. It wasn't a yeller and a screamer like our friend at Indiana University, Bobby Knight. And he earned his bachelor's and master's degree at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and was a teacher. He taught economics and sociology at Central High. And I didn't have him. And I'm not so sure if I could have gotten an A from him because, you know, he was, but maybe I could have. I should
Is
have
this Diney we're talking
no,
about?
No, we're talking about
Kelleher.
At Madison Central High School, Coach Kelleher. I'm
all
sorry.
Right. No, that's all right.
And he was inducted in the Sports Hall of Fame and the Wisconsin Coaches Hall of Fame, Madison City Hall of Fame and the Wisconsin Coaches Hall of Fame. And he was an outstanding coach, not only at Central. He was there 2 years in 67 and 68. And then he went to East High, where he had a legendary career at Madison East.
I think he ended up writing a book himself, A History of High School Football.
Yes, and he was so gracious to give me a copy of it. And he had all the all-city people in there.
Yeah.
And he had all the records in the Big 8 Conference of the coaches and the teams. Going way back into the early 1900s.
So what did you learn from him, Bob, would you say?
Well, I would say a lot of things. First of all, he was insistent on people being on time. Mm-hmm. He was insistent on people giving their 100% effort at all times. Mm-hmm. He was insistent on respecting the officials. Respect in basketball, you get your hand up in the air when you foul somebody. Called for a foul. He was, I would say, a tactician. You know, he had tactics, and he was a great motivational speaker. You know, before games, he had us so revved up. You know, I told him one time after I was done, I said, hey, you wouldn't even need to open the doors there at Breeze Stevens Field. We could have run right through them. We were so cranked up. So I think the job he did in the motivation area really set him apart from a lot of other coaches. And he wasn't a type of person that would be screaming and yelling at people. Occasionally he'd say something, and he could say it very tactfully, but it would be in a calm demeanor. Like, I don't think you're giving 100% today. He might say that to a player. Mm-hmm. But he was...
And you had another, John Olson.
Yes.
Who I don't know a lot about.
Well, John Olson was my second mentor. And he was a track coach at Central High School my freshman year in 1966. But he took over for a legendary Gus Pollack, who was a coach... football coach for a number of years, 20 plus years at Central High School, and he took over for him in 1964. So he was the coach, and I said Nobby started, he was a coach of 67, in the fall of 67, because Coach Olson was the head coach in 64 and 65. And he had an outstanding team where he had two all-city players, Al Verdeen and Bob Snell, in 1965. This is Coach Olson, and then he was recruited to go to Memorial High School. And most of the kids at Central were very sad about losing him, but we understood that we knew at that point that Central was closing and that he might be out of a job. So I think it was a great opportunity for him, and I think it was a great opportunity for Coach Kelleher, because Coach Kelleher, you know, was a not only the football coach, but he was a baseball coach and freshman basketball coach. But Coach Kelleher was talented to coach football, basketball, baseball, as was John Olson. And John was a track coach at Central, freshman track coach. And he assisted Nobby Kelleher in basketball. Not Nobby Kelleher, Bob Harris in basketball.
You mentioned Harris. Tell a little about, he was, you know, we use the word legend, but he really was, right?
Yes,
nicknamed Boomer.
Yes, yes. I can tell you one story about Coach Harris that Dr. John Olson, who was, who I'll talk about a little next after I get done with Coach Boomer, but Coach Olson told me a story a number of years ago. He said, Coach Harris was officiating in Stoughton, Wisconsin with Dinee Mansfield, the legendary baseball coach. And there was, at the start of the game, there was a smaller man, probably about 5'2", on one of the front rows. And he was giving Coach Harris a hard time, you know, saying, hey, you need glasses. You forgot your glasses. How could you make that call? And Coach Harris had a temper. That might be an understatement. And I thought, boy, I wasn't there, but I would have told the guy, you better not do that to Coach Harris. And so the official coach, that game, Dinee, and was listening to it. And Coach Bob Harris, who was officiating, was listening to this guy. So at the start of the third quarter, before he threw the ball up, he walked over, looked at him, and said, hey, you, did you pay to get in here? And the man said, yes. And he said, okay, and he went back. You know, he was trying to intimidate him, I think, a little bit, because Boomer was over a foot taller
than
this man.
Yes.
Yeah. Foot and an inch, I think. But so after the game, or in the second half, he was continuing to just rattle him throughout the whole game, yell at him and scream at him and tell him he didn't know what he was doing and he couldn't see and on and on. So Coach Harris, when he was walking off the court after the game, he looked over at this man and he said, hey, would you follow me into the locker room? And the guy said, sure, yeah. So he gets him into the locker room. He says, come over here. And he opened up a locker. And in those days, the lockers were pretty good. 5'2", the guy wasn't too big. So he put him in the locker, hung him up, shut the door. And he comes walking out. And John Olson told me, he said he came walking out of that gym and somebody yelled over to Coach Harris. He said, hey, Coach Harris, what did you do with the mayor? The man was the mayor of Stoughton. And if he's still living, I apologize for telling this story. But, you know, I heckle a little bit, too, so I don't have any bad things to say about the mayor. But I would have warned him about Coach Harris.
Did you learn some things from Coach Harris other than, you know, how to hang up?
Oh, yes. I did, and maybe at the break we could talk
about
that.
Yeah, we want to talk about him, and also
John Olson.
John Olson, and one other, Roger Wiebe.
Yes.
I knew Coach Wiebe from my days at West, and he then later became a Blackhawk member. So we'll look forward to that. We'll be back to talk to Bob Schlicht about the importance of mentors in life in just a moment.
Way up firm and high, out past the cornfields where the woods got heavy, out in the back seat of my 60 Chevy.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Welcome back, Madison Talks. I'm Doug Moe. Happy to be chatting today with Bob Schlicht on his new book, The Importance of Mentors in Life, and talking, Bob, about some of it can sometimes be the most important mentors when you're a kid in high school, and you had some mentors slash characters who were important in your life as a high school athlete, right? We had talked, you were going to talk about John Olson and Boomer Harris as we were going to break. So.
Yes, and I want to say Coach John Olson was my freshman track coach, as I mentioned earlier. He was a 1953 graduate of East High School. Coach Nobby Kelleher was a 1951 Central High School graduate. Coach Olson participated in football, basketball, and track at East High School and was a freshman football coach and basketball coach and track coach early in his career at Madison Central. So he, in the 60s, early 60s, and he had a lot of championship teams when he was there. But Coach John Olson took over for Gus Pollack, as I mentioned, 64 and 65, and then went to Memorial High School in the fall of 66. And that's when Coach Wayne Nobby Kelleher became coach at Madison Central. And I said 67 earlier. It was actually 66,
no worries. Sure. Yeah.
66, 67, and 68.
It's only 50 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And then I mentioned, too, before the break, Roger Wiebe, who I'm not sure who ever coached you, but you you got to know him pretty well.
Yes. Coach Wiebe did coach me.
He did, okay.
Yeah, and he was our sophomore basketball coach, and he was a defensive back coach on the football team. And,
okay.
And so I got to spend quite a bit of time with him, especially my sophomore year. And he was Boomer's number one assistant after John Olson left in basketball. And but a very, very interesting man and a very good mentor to me. Coach Wiebe went on to, when Central closed in 1969, he went to Memorial for a year and was the assistant basketball coach for Bob Boomer Harris. And then he went over to, ironically, to coach under Jim Stevens.
At West.
And he was very loyal to Jim Stevens. And he coached there for a number of years, and he took the West High once he became head coach after several years because he was very loyal to Jim Stevens. He had other offers, I'm certain of that, to go to other schools, but he wanted to eventually be at West because that's where he played his high school basketball. And he played on the team in 1957, the basketball team in 1958, and they went to the state tournament.
And the 50, I think that was the year, one of those years, East beat them in the finals, didn't they? Or the semis, something like that.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And what happened in 1957, they were runner-up in the tournament, and they had a lot of talented players on that team. And just to mention a few of them, John Braun had 14 points in that game. Legendary athlete Jim Bakken, who played football at the university and was a kicker for the
place kicker for the St. Louis Cardinal,
and just an all-around athlete, football, basketball, baseball, and he can hit a golf ball as well as most pros. And Lowell, his brother, is the same way. A man by the name of Jim Horney, H-O-R-N-E-Y, had 9 points in that game. Jim Rasmussen, tall center, talented guy, outstanding golfer. He had 12 in that in the finals against Shawano in the 1957 game, and they lost by just 5 points, 66-61. Don Quam had 12 points. Fritz Krueger and Howie Mazur were on the team. They didn't score, but they were on the team. And Howie was, I think, a freshman that year, and Fritz would have been a junior. So, and Fritz had a nice career the following year in 1958.
Am I remembering right, Bob? Or maybe you won't be sure either. But I think East won it then, like, the next year, didn't
yes.
they?
Yes, yeah. East won it. And the irony of that, Roger Wiebe told me the story. He said that in 1958, Madison West was ahead of Madison East going into the last quarter of the semifinal game.
Right, right.
And I remember Coach Wiebe said, yeah, we were really frustrated because we didn't score, the West High didn't score any field goals in the fourth quarter. And they lost the game to Madison East 55-53. So
an East team that had Pat Richter, among others,
yes,
playing for it.
Yes, yeah. And Ron Staley, and there was just...
Yeah, they were tough.
I think Steve Underwood was on that team, too, but a lot of talented athletes. And then, of course, in... So West is runner-up in 57, Madison West, and in 58, Pat Richter and his team wins it all in 1958.
So, now, I think Roger Wiebe actually took him to a championship, though, eventually, didn't
yes,
he, as head coach?
In 1992, Madison West won the championship, Wisconsin State High School Basketball Championship, and then... in 1993 and 1997, he took West High back to the state tournament.
Yeah.
But I think you were at West when they went to the state in 90, or well, no, excuse me, in...
72. That was a great West High team that was ranked number one in the state for most of the year, but then their star player, Bob Falk, got hurt in the tournament, and they didn't win. But, boy, there's not much worse than losing the big game in high school, I'll tell you.
If they could have played freshman players when I was a senior, I would have got to play against Bob Falk because he was so good. I mean, as a sophomore, he was amazing all the way through.
If they've ever, I don't know if they've ever done any of those all kind of all-time high school teams, but I got to think he'd be under serious consideration.
No question.
Well, these coaches, though, Bob, and again, maybe it's the cliche, but cliches become so for a reason. I'm trying to get at what you got from them. And was it, I'm going to guess it was giving 100%, getting up when you fall down, that sort of thing.
Well, Roger Wiebe told me a lot of important things. And he said, and I was thinking about Nigel Hayes, because Nigel Hayes said in the paper he's been struggling with his free throw shooting.
Yes.
And there was one thing that Roger Wiebe told me way back when about free throws. He said, Bob, if you want to be good in free throws, you got to practice at least 100 a day.
Wow.
He said, because it's got to be automatic. And I thought that was pretty profound. And he told me, I remember like it was yesterday, basketball requires speed, agility, and hustle. Mm-hmm. And he said that if you don't shoot 100 a day per season, you're not going to be consistent on free throw shooting. Now, I probably shot a lot more than that, and I was okay. You know, I might have made, 65% of the free throws. But then he also said, sports are important, gentlemen, but grades in school is more important. Right. And I thought that was profound. And they all felt that way. And then a couple other things, he really emphasized to me as I got older, teaching is a noble profession. You ought to consider it. And he said, if you don't get along with your coach, he said, you will likely be sitting on the bench, which I think young people should know.
And a lot of these points translate outside of a basketball gym.
Yes.
Getting along with people,
yes.
Getting along with your boss.
Yes.
Even the practicing free throws. I mean, what that's saying is you've got to put in the time.
Right. Yeah. And sports is important, but I can tell you, I had two daughters that were very musically gifted and they were athletic, but they chose the dancing and the singing and the what have you. But they had so many wonderful mentors. So I talk about this in the book, that if someone's interested in writing for the school newspaper, singing in musicals, being involved in plays, being involved with any extracurricular activity, it's a good thing to do. And these mentors that might be music teachers or art teachers, they're going to help you as much as any coaches, because listen to them, because they're going to demand pretty much the same thing. Be on time to class, do your best, and make sure you get your homework done on time. So all these important things, I just had it riveted in me, because I happen to be lucky enough to have a great older brothers and an older sister and great coaches. I mean, and so I listened to these people, once I got to the university, I realized how good they were,
mm-hmm.
because I thought many of these coaches could have coached at the university,
sure.
because they were that talented.
And then out of UW is where you start picking up mentors outside of the sports realm.
Yes.
Early on, in another podcast, we talked about kind of the unusual way you got into banking through a former girlfriend who
yes.
had gotten a job and then sort of recommended you, right?
Yes, yes. And got into that job, and that was Joan Schneider at the time, she stayed in the business and has been very successful. But I was fortunate, because I had a cousin that was in the business too, Roth Schleck,
mm-hmm.
My grandmother's maiden name, who married my grandfather Anton, was Schleck. So we were second cousin. He was my dad's first cousin. But I think the banking mentors that I had throughout my career helped me immeasurably. I'm thinking of Don Jones, Jerry Shields,
and those were your
Bob
first
Gorsuch.
Your first two were Jones and Shields, right?
Yes.
And again, what kind of things did you learn from them?
Well, it was very interesting that both of them were very well trained in the business, so they knew all aspects. And it was a small bank that I started with. It was a $5 million bank, total assets. It was Affiliated Bank of Middleton. And Don had grown up in a small town and had become president of the bank at the Affiliated Middleton, but he'd worked in operations and lending, very unique. Jerry Shields had grown up in Rockford, went to Rockford West High School, and the best way of describing it, went into the Navy and then got into the banking business after he finished 4 years in the Navy. And he was very knowledgeable in operations and loans, very unusual. So I was so fortunate to get these two very talented men to coach me and mentor me. And
one thing that happened, because it was a small bank, is you got to do almost everything.
Yeah.
That's got to be valuable in any business.
Yeah,
You kind of learn it from the ground up, right?
And I was fortunate as a kid to work in the golf shop and on the golf course for my dad, so I knew the value of staying a little long, getting there a little earlier and staying a little longer. And what I found is they were able to teach me the technical part of the business. And of course, I knew how to interface with people, because at the golf course, I was, saying hi to members when I was 10 years old and ask them how they were doing. And boy, the weather's beautiful. I was able to, I wasn't shy in that regard, but as far as speaking in front of a group of people, I was terrible. I just, I don't want to do this.
Nobody wants to get up in front of a group and speak. Not at first, anyway.
No, I know it. So, but I can tell you that they were so wonderful, and then they moved on to another bank, and I moved on to the Hilldale Bank, and Dick Reeson and Dave Mergen were the leaders there. Very charismatic people and very gifted with customer service. So they, so I had all the technical things, but I watched them. Here's what we do when customers walk through the door. We're going to have our officers rotate and stop them and say, what can I do for you?
And I think, Bob, that's one of the lessons of the importance of mentors in life. If you, and I encourage folks to read the book, is that you don't necessarily have to absorb everything from one person, but they may have one thing that,
yes,
if you can learn that from them, grab that from them, and
yes,
another piece from
absolutely
somebody else. And
absolutely,
that's it's a lifelong process, right?
It really is.
Well, we'll get more of that in just a moment. The book is The Importance of Mentors in Life, talking with Bob Schlicht, and we'll be back in just a moment.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Welcome back. I'm Doug Moe, delighted to be talking with Bob Schlicht about his new book, The Importance of Mentors in Life. And we hit a couple of banking mentors of yours, Bob, with a long career that you had in banking. I know along the way, in my reading of the book, you had other business mentors, though, and I don't know if you would call Drew Howick a mentor or not, but in your chapter there, you talk about management philosophy and management style and theory.
Yes.
Can you talk a little about it? Because I found that very interesting.
Yes. Drew Howick is a psychologist, a very, very sharp man. And we actually hired him to do some consulting for us in 1994 when I was working as the president of Valley Bank, and Valley Bank was acquired by the M&I Bank. And he came in and had a very elaborate discussion about Myers-Briggs, which is trying to figure out the various 16 different types of personalities.
Are those the two that invented it?
Myers and Briggs. Okay. Yes, it was I think it was a mother-daughter team.
Really?
And he got into that, and he talked about the importance of working with different types of people and putting them in the right spots for different types of jobs. And a lot of human resource officers use Myers-Briggs. And the irony of it is I used for most of my career something that I learned from legendary quarterback Bart Starr that we've talked about in a previous podcast, and that was the style recognition indicator. And that only had four departments instead of 16. And I thought that was easier to convey, and when you're hiring someone, to see what type of person you want.
And it gets down to personality traits and that,
yes,
sort of thing?
Yes, yeah. It really does. And I often wondered why some people like you and some people don't, and it's usually because you have a different personality type. And Bart Starr, in his tape, he had in the 70s, he had bought into, I think in Birmingham, Alabama, a car dealership, and he said, I want our salesmen to be able to interface well with our clients and customers. And the only way we're going to be able to do that effectively is if we understand we want to hire some salespeople that are very outgoing, some people that are more reserved, some people that are detail-oriented, and we want to get different people, because we've found over our experience in this car business and what he's learned is they would prefer to deal, people would prefer to deal with someone that has a similar personality type. Yeah. So I used in the book the example of Donald Rumsfeld, who was the Secretary of Defense, a real no-nonsense person, very direct, and he would be categorized in the style recognition as a controller, so non-people but assertive. Then someone that's very gregarious, like Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton, they would prefer to deal with someone very gregarious.
Right.
And it makes sense. And I thought to myself, okay, so if you have someone that comes in that's a very outgoing and gregarious person, he's going to prefer to deal with a salesperson like himself or herself. And the analytical style, which would be non-people and non-assertive, those are a lot of accountants and CPAs. They're very kind. Everybody loves them. Maybe the advocating guys are too full of themselves. But the analyzing people are very good with details. So if someone comes in to want to buy a car, they're going to know all about the efficiency of the car, the environmental issues in the car, the gas mileage.
But as a manager, then, Bob, are you trying to find places where these folks will be most productive? Who to sit them next to? What?
Yes,
you know,
yes.
You take this information and then.
Yes, you take the information and then put people. You know, if we've got a manager, we found that a lot of advocators like Reagan and Clinton become managers. Controllers. There's a lot of controllers that are more assertive, but you know, don't have some of the people skills that a advocator might have. Our managers, the analyzers. We have a lot of analyzers that are managers because they're even keeled, they're smart, they're quantitative, they're good with people. And then we have the facilitators, and those are the people that are very outgoing and personable, but they're non-assertive. Everybody loves them, but what we found is that they don't like the management thing. They might enjoy marketing, doing things, interfacing with people. They might like sales, but having to confront people is something they don't like doing.
Right.
Where the advocators and the controllers, the Clinton types and the Reagan types, and the controllers like Donald Rumsfeld, they don't have any problem being real direct and blunt with people. Okay. when the time is needed to be direct and blunt. So you have all these different types. And
how was it received when you brought this then into the workplace?
Very well, because what I would do when I hired people early on in the 70s, I would say, tell me where you think you fit in this box.
Okay.
And everybody would say, well, I think I'm this. I think I'm that. I think I'm this. I think I'm that. And they would always have a very good sense. Are you assertive? And they'd say, not really. Are you people-oriented or non-people-oriented? Well, I'm kind of shy, so right. You know, that might be someone that's maybe an analytical style. And then if the facilitator would be very bubbly and outgoing and want to know, talk about the weather and the Badgers and the Packers scores. Right. And so what we found is we could find managers in these three of the four fields, but we could find employees in all of the fields because we needed people with different styles and different strengths. And what Drew Houick said in his, and I thought it was profound, he was such a smart man. He said, you know, when you have teams getting together, what you find if you put all kinds of Ronald Reagan's and Bill Clinton's advocators together, oh, they'll get to a decision in, oh, if it takes a half hour, they'll get there in 10 minutes.
Right.
But they won't look at all the aspects. Where if you put a controller and an analyzer and a facilitator and an advocator in the same group, it'll take them a long time to come to a decision. but it'll be a better decision.
They'll have considered more.
Yeah. Considered more things. And I thought how fascinating that was.
Yeah.
But I was so lucky to learn some of those things early on, and I wanted to share them with people. And I started, one of my first jobs outside of Blackhawk was working at McDonald's, and I found that that was important to realize, how come some people don't like me, you know? Because I was kind of silly and fun-loving.
Was it the one on University Avenue where,
yes.
where Whole Foods is? That was yes. my first job.
Oh, was it really? Yes. And our manager, Red Hat, he was my age, but he was an analyzer and very successful in business later, but he was very serious-minded. And, of course, I'm making fun. You know, I said, geez, I just dropped that hamburger, and I didn't. You know, hey, that's not funny, you know. So, but I thought, wow, that's why people do have issues with different styles.
Let's make sure we hit a couple of your other important mentors from banking. And I think it's chronological. Bob Gorsuch.
Yes. Bob Gorsuch was a tremendous leader, and he was a very assertive man. And he coached. If he would have been a coach, he would have been more like Bobby Knight.
Okay.
You know, intense.
Outspoken.
Yeah. Analytical style. But he had a good sense with people. He was a high school quarterback, captain of the football, basketball, baseball team, gifted baseball player. I think his dad played in the minor leagues. So he got the athleticism maybe from both his mom and dad, but certainly from his dad. But he was a very detail-oriented guy and unique in that he was both quantitative and qualitative. So he was good with clients, but he was trained as an accountant. So he had an accounting degree from Northern Michigan University. So he had gifts with people, but gifts with numbers. And that's an ideal...
That's pretty rare.
To be a banker, and you almost have to have those things. And most of the quantitative people I knew, just Bob O'Malley, John Mack, they also had good personalities that they could deal with customers. And the ones that were on the far end, because you have in these boxes, you can be extreme on either side,
right.
And you're going to have a problem there if you're extreme on either side. So if you want to manage anyway.
You mentioned John Mack, and he gets a lot of pages in importance of mentors in life. And what did he bring to?
Well, you know, John was grew up in Milwaukee, and he got into the banking industry, and was really a legendary banker in Milwaukee before he came to Madison. One of the most famous guys in Wisconsin banking history was Jack Pulicker at the M&I Corporation. He tried to hire John Mack twice, not once, but twice. Hmm. And John didn't want to work at the M&I. He wanted to move to Madison because I think he wanted his kids. He knew there was a good Catholic school here, Edgewood, and he wanted them to go to the university. And he had two sons and three daughters. And they're just... Every one of them is very successful because he was a very good dad, good husband, hard worker. They saw dad leave at 4:30 in the morning to go to mass. And my dad was Catholic and my mom was Lutheran, but I wasn't Catholic. So I thought, boy, at 4:30, I always told John, I'm sleeping at 4:30, you know, get up at 6 so I can get into work about 7:30. But he was a very hardworking guy, but I learned so much from him about the way he handled people. He was good at hiring people. He was not afraid to terminate someone if they weren't good. And you know, in Jack Welch's book, who I quote a lot, he said two things that kind of sunk into my head, and it reminded me of John Mack. He said, "If you like firing people, you don't belong in the business world or any world. But if you can't fire people, you don't belong in the business world or any other type of job, private sector, public sector." So I thought that was pretty profound. So I learned what a hard worker John was. I remember when we were looking at the possibility of getting acquired by Valley Bank Corporation, John and I and Bob Kramer met in a meeting, and we were talking about it, and the meeting started at 7 in the morning. Now, I usually got there at 7:30 because I was not a morning person, so I could greet customers at 9. I'd be awake by then.
Right.
Well, John would get there very early every morning, and so we had a meeting on a Saturday morning, and it got to be 3 o'clock, And I looked at John. I said, John, are you hungry for lunch or something? And he said, well, what time is it? So that's how hard a worker he was. So he had the personality. People loved him. He had a personality, but he was also very quantitative because he had a finance degree from Marquette University. So he understood accounting. He understood operations, bank operations. So he comes to town, recruited by Bob O'Malley and Colley Ferris. Colley Ferris and Bob O'Malley recruited him. And they were just overwhelmed because they told me years later, yeah, this guy was an operations guy. He could spread financial statements. He was great with customers. You know, so and they didn't have a president job for him, so that's when he went to the Middleton Bank. But so kind of a legendary guy, and he surrounded himself with Bob Cramer, who was a PhD at the university, and hired him eventually to be the CFO, who was a wizard on banking management and banking law and on asset liability management that banks were doing then. And he was a industry leader across the country.
The book is The Importance of Mentors in Life, talking with Bob Schlicht. And Bob, again, on folks who might be interested in the book, barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com.
Yes, amazon.com or barnesandnoble.com.
Okay.
And barnesandnoble.com, you just have to Google in my name, Robert A. Schlicht, and then The Importance of Mentors in Life.
Okay. Well.
And I think one of the sites, I think maybe Barnes & Noble has I think they have a special on it this week.
All right.
They took a look at my picture and they said, yeah, we better lower the price here.
No, it's a very interesting book. And one thing I wanted to mention is that along with all the banking history and inside stories that you tell, you've had a life apart from that too, and a lot of it was civic-minded things. And I want to just touch on that. I know you were involved with United Way.
Yes.
And there was, I think, a mentor there, or at least somebody you admired, George Nelson.
Yes.
Who I knew from
General Yes, Trade. George was a very important mentor in my life and very active in the community.
Right.
And recommended me to get on the chamber board, and I eventually became chair of the chamber. And then United Way, Leslie
Howard.
Yeah. Howard was just an amazing lady and did just fine work. And the current head of United Way, Renee Moll.
Yeah, no relation to me, but
no.
Like Renee a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And well, you know, you go back far enough, you never know.
Yeah, you never know.
But it's funny because Renee now is the president and CEO, but when I was the chair in 2003 of United Way, the campaign, she was my go-to person, and I knew she was going places. She was an advocator with a very technical mind, which is kind of unusual. And I can tell you that I believe that both Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton were very people-oriented, like Renee Moll, but they had the technical aspect of really understanding the finer points of accounting or detail-oriented, and that's kind of unusual for an advocator to have the detail skills. But my dad always said, when he hired people on the golf course at Blackhawk, because he was a greenskeeper and golf pro, he said to me one day, and I'll never forget this, he said, son, some people are people-oriented, some people are detail-oriented, and if you don't try to get somebody that is people-oriented that wants to learn the detail aspects, don't hire them. If you have someone that's detail-oriented, doesn't know the importance of being good with clients and customers and members, don't hire them. So I always found it fascinating that if you're not good at something, you better work on that. Otherwise, you have no chance of moving up the ladder in anything, whether you want to be a principal of or a head of the English department at a high school or a professor of finance, and you want to run the department, you better know a lot about the management process.
These opportunities, I know, were a form of giving back for you with the Chamber and United Way. But you got something out of it, too, right? I mean, and a fun one that's in you devote several pages to in the book was a trip you took to Japan. That was with the Chamber, wasn't it?
Yes, and that one, I took copious notes when I was over there because I was so impressed with the Japanese people. They were just wonderful. I was so impressed with the setting that we were in. It was like we were in the United Nations because they had Japanese and English translated simultaneously. So you had to hear headphones on, And right away, you knew what the Japanese person was saying. And I had to speak over there. And I was nervous, but not too nervous. Now, if you would have asked me to do that in high school, which Coach Kelleher did, and I ducked it, I said, oh, Bill Tobas wants to do it by himself. Oh, does he? Okay, that's fine. It was the last year of the school. We were the captains of the team. And so, but the interesting thing, I went with Bill McCoshin, who was working for Governor Thompson at the time as the head of the Commerce Department.
Sure.
And Tim Erdman, who I went to grade school with, who was at the time
Marshall's
running
son.
Marshall's son and running the company, or eventually running the company. I'm not sure if he was at that time. And then Bob Brennan. Now, Bob Brennan was the track coach for a number of years and did a great job. And then Madison
at
West.
At UW, yeah.
Yeah, Madison West grad of 1951. So he was in, but he was all state in. And he was a runner, and he's still running, and he still looks good. I had lunch with him not long ago.
Oh, wow.
But great. Bob Brennan took over the Chamber of Commerce. And one of the people that he hired was, after he retired, was Bob Cook. And Bob Cook was one of my favorite people, and he had gone to Central High School. So I have about 10 pages dedicated to Bob Cook and his wife. They were two of the nicest people, and he was an unbelievable mentor to me. And I remember he told me once, behind every successful man is a surprised mother-in-law. And I thought that was pretty profound. You know, I think there may be some truth to that, you know, because I have two daughters.
Now, is this Bob Cook that was out at American Family?
Yes, American
yeah,
Family.
Yeah, marvelous man.
Oh, marvelous man. And I was fortunate to... listen to him about a lot of things, and I had some really tough times, like everybody does in life. He was the first man that I went to, and he was so wonderful. You know, my dad was long gone, and it was like a father figure that really knew people, and he was probably the best that I've seen in the people business. And he told me, he said, "Yeah, my wife and I would go on trips, and his wife is a sweetheart." I'd say, okay, who's the district manager in Cincinnati and what's his wife's name? And of course, he knew it. I want you to quiz me on these things. So I had friends that were in high-level positions and low-level positions, and he knew them all. I mean, this man was amazing. He knew their, great guy. He, you know, do you know his wife? You know, and I didn't know his wife, June, you know, I mean,
right.
it was unbelievable what the things that he told me about the management process and of course, he was a big help to Bob Brennan because everybody respected him in town. And then he hired Dale Mathwick to replace him. And Dale Mathwick was just a gem of a guy. And then Harvey Pierce, and I got to personally bank those two people. And they're just wonderful men. So he put his footprint on that. And he was a Central grad, Bob Cook. And
now they've had the wisdom to sponsor a golf tournament in Madison.
Yes,
so it all sort
yes.
of comes full circle.
Yes,
doesn't
yes.
it? Bob, I want to thank you first off, but I also want to make sure that folks know, listeners know, just how much there is in this book, The Importance of Mentors in Life by Bob Schlick, because I hope you've gotten a sense of that listening. But there's so much on business and banking and sports and Madison history. And just tips on how to lead a better, smarter life. So it's been a lot of fun, Bob.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, nice chatting with you again. Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, The Importance of Mentors in Life by Robert A. Schlicht. Thanks for listening. When I'm near the girl that I love best, my heart beats so it scares me to death when she touches my hand. Oh, what a chill I got. Her lips are like a volcano and it's hot. I'm proud to say that she's my buttercup. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. My tongue gets tied when I try to speak.